There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you? There was funky Billy Chin and little Sammy Chung. He said, "Here comes the big boss. Let's get it on." We took a bow, made a stand, started swaying with the hand. A sudden motion made me skip. Now we're into a brand new trip.
What was everybody doing?
I think they were Mambo number 5. Oh, well, I forget. Yeah. But welcome to the last episode of Max Mike Movies. Series, because and you're going to like it. Ha! Oof. I fooled you! No, seriously, we've come to the end of another series, and what better way to do so than with a Hong Kong Kung Fu film? No better! Kung Fu Hustle is a 2004 comedy, no, really, from director Stephen Chow. I saw it when it came out, have fond memories of it, but haven't seen it since. Do I still like it? And does Max? Who's Max? I'm glad you asked. He's that master of mirth, the absolute king of kung fu, and our host, Max Taekwon Leap Levine. Give us a yell, Max.
Boot to the head.
And I am the second host, inconvenient as I might be, Mike, another for Jenny and the Wimp Loose. Before we discuss this week's film, we're going off to uncharted territory. And that's
I'm already lost.
Poll question.
What we wanted to know last week was, what is your favorite cartoon animal? Let the fur fly! First up on the website, we have our northern buddy, keeping those igloos trimmed, Vince. He wrote, quote, "I am not sure I have a favorite cartoon animal, but over the past year I have seen Flo 5+ times, so I must love that cat."
Kitty. That's an adorable cat. Probably one of the best, like, just depictions of a realistic cat in a movie.
Yes, and it's word-free, so anybody can enjoy it.
Yep.
Unless you don't like cats, in which case, get off our show.
Yeah.
For older cartoon animals, I love the dodo in the Warner Brothers cartoons. It just cracked me up whenever I watched, end quote. Well, vodio dodo to you too, Vince.
Yeah, I'm the last dodo.
Last dada dodos. On to Facebook, where we had a bunch. Byron Ho responded first with, quote, "This is tough. Lion King lions or the tigers in Zootopia," end quote. Oh, yeah, those tigers.
Nine lives.
Thanks, Byron. Nick Hoffman answered, quote, "Toothless the Night Fury." Remy, of course, end quote. The last from Ratatouille. Ratatouille, I'm betting.
Yeah, Ratatouille, fresh and fruity, yep.
I always Ratatouille after beans. Thanks, Nick. Dave. Sent, quote, "Got to love Tonari no Totoro, but I grew up with Bugs Bunny, and nothing I have seen on the big screen matches the affection I feel for Bugs. An affection that will never diminish, because I don't plan to go back and watch any of them again," end quote. Well, that's an interesting way to keep love
they
alive.
They do hold up.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Regan McStravick posted, quote, "Disney's Robin Hood is still one of my favorite tellings of the story," end quote. And I'm guessing all the animal characters therein. Thanks, Regan. Brian Mundo did not manage to find a cartoon character from Fifth Element, and so answered, quote, "I like the hyenas in Lion King," end quote. Laughing all the way. Thanks, Brian.
I don't know. I think you could make a case for Ruby Rod being a cartoon animal.
No king, no king, la-di-da-di-da-da.
Ed?
Richard Tatum's response went, quote, "Probably the horse entangled," end quote. Oh, Maximus for the win. Thanks, Richard.
He's awesome.
He is totally awesome. Jen Ng simply posted a GIF of Totoro. Thanks, Jen. Derek Steele said, quote, "I loved Rango. I'm not sure it's the greatest movie or the greatest character, but the film was fun," end quote. Oh, yes. Johnny Depp's lizard character. Thanks, Derek.
Yep.
Matt Reisman sent, quote, "I love the animals in The Sword and the Stone. I actually think they're the most emotionally developed animal characters Disney had done until Lion King. I always feel bad for that squirrel and love the scraggly wolf. But I think Abu is the perfect animal sidekick, and Miko is the one I'd want most as a pet," end quote. Until I get rabies, but thanks. Lots of great ones. Thanks, Matt. It took me a while to remember. I think Miko was the raccoon in Pocahontas.
Oh, yes.
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain. The
story of that wayward Polish girl and her. Never mind. Charles Forsythe posted, quote, if you allow animated animals in a live-action film, it would be Morris the Dijang, I guess, in Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Oh, God, the flying butt?
I don't remember it, so. Favorite animated okay. animal in an animated film would have to be the cat bus from My Neighbor Totoro, end quote. Well, okay. That's three from Totoro. Didn't expect that. Thanks, yeah. Charles. Brad Albertson stated, quote, Charlie and all dogs go to heaven. You can't keep a good dog down, end quote. Huh. Thanks, Brad. And, oh, wait, not but. In the email bag, but on Facebook, we have one of Ooh. Our favorite correspondents, Franz Josef Halbwitz, who responded,
Herr Halbwitz?
Yeah. Who responded, quote, Bugs Bunny, honorable mention, fellow Warnerverse animal, coyote, end quote. That's Wile-E Coyote, super genius.
Super genius. I like the sound of that.
Was wondering if Bugs was going to get another vote, but thanks, Franz. Guess that means it's your turn, Max. Who is your favorite cartoon animal?
Oh, there's a bunch, but really, I do have to agree with Bugs. Bugs is just awesome. Yeah. He is a goddamn archetype. He is an icon.
Yeah.
He is the trickster figure, and he is always the one who never goes looking for trouble, but is always ready for when it finds him.
I didn't start this fight, but I'm sure gonna finish it.
Of course you realize this means war!
Yeah.
Yep, it's Bugs all the way. He is just awesome.
Yeah.
What about you? Who's your number one?
This is going to surprise you. Mm-hmm. Bugs Bunny.
No, stop.
How can it not be Bugs Bunny?
I know.
I have soft spots for also Wacko Warner, Pinky, and or the Brain.
Oh, sure.
Because I think they tried a number of times to bring back that wacky Warner Brothers magic, and it mostly didn't work until the Animaniacs showed up. And while the animation wasn't quite as good, the humor and the writing in those shows was on par, and sometimes even more clever than the Bugs Bunny cartoons. If you haven't seen the originals in a while, go back and watch them. If nothing else, when they're actually trying to teach something, like the state capitals or the countries of the world, they're absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, they're terrific.
So, yeah, Bugs Bunny all the way. It's all great fun and great answers. Thanks for sending them in. They're delicious. For this week, we'd like to know, what's the best cinematic mix of violence and comedy? Or should they mix it all? Let us know by taking the usual route, which we'll trod once more at the end of the show. For now, it's
facts.
Kung Fu Hustle budget $20 million adjusted from Hong Kong dollars. Take worldwide again in U.S. bucks $105 million. That's a lot of pot stickers.
Hello.
Yeah. There's a little tribute not only to Bruce Lee but particularly Return of the Dragon. The little pantomime the landlady does to the Axe Gang boss is exactly the same one as Bruce did in that movie.
Yep, the clenched fist, the wagging the finger. Yep,
we'll come back to her.
Very, very Bruce Lee.
You might have wondered about that little clip of the landlord and his wife doing the cha-cha. That, too, is a nod to Bruce Lee, who, wait for it, won the 1958 cha-cha championship.
He was apparently a great cha-cha dancer.
I mean, the fact that he's also a great dancer does not surprise me. No.
No, if there's anything physical, I would bet he's really good at it.
There were a couple of Hong Kong legends behind the scenes of this film, and they helped with the choreography and directing of a couple of the fight scenes. And they are Sammo Hung and Yuen Wu Ping. And if you don't know them, look them up.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
According to Bill Murray, this film was the cat's pajamas of comedy. He was noted to say, quote, it is the supreme achievement of the modern age in terms of comedy. There should have been a day of mourning for American comedy the day that movie came out, end quote.
Wow. Yeah. Bill, really?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow, that's wild.
This was the highest grossing Hong Kong film, surpassing Chow's previous effort, Shaolin Soccer, which is also worth looking up. Kung Fu Hustle would hold the record all the way till 2021 when it was broken by a film called Anita.
You need a what?
Anita Big Win.
I don't know. Anita. Man, those Chinese have some weird names.
Yeah, Anita. boy, that's odd.
Wonder how you
like
spell
Steven.
That.
Okay.
Steven? Oh, come on. You're making that one up.
Well, it's really going to weird you out when I tell you it's spelled with a P-H. For Steven. Anyway.
Yeah, it should be Stephen.
Enough. You were an English major. Stop it. You know how to mispronounce things just fine. I know you do.
Yep.
If you were wondering about the sign language being given from the ice cream girl to Chow's character, she was telling him, "Do you remember me? Long ago you helped me. I do remember you." Because if you watch the same clip or the same version that I did, they did not put subtitles for that.
No, and I'm not entirely convinced that was real sign language either.
It was. It's Chinese sign language, not American sign language. It was in the trivia.
Okay.
Yes, the hallway blood flood scene was a direct tribute to The Shining. We just don't know why.
There's a lot of that in there.
Speaking of tributes, there's a couple to the movie The Untouchables, and one very obvious one to Spider-Man, of all things, because at one point, the character Donut says, as he's dying, "With great power comes great responsibility." Rest easy, Uncle Ben. There's likely a lot more...
We love your rice.
never mind. There's likely a lot more, but it's in Cantonese and I can't read it. Do you have anything, Max? Any trivia do you know from?
Well, some of it's about the cast, but there are a lot of tributes to various movies. There's The Godfather with "I brought you a gift you can't refuse," kind of a little sideways.
Yeah.
And everywhere, did you notice all of the movie posters?
Yes.
Oh my God, and old classics. Yeah. Stephen Chow is a huge cinephile.
Apparently, at least for Western films. Yes. Because we don't see it. Well, if they're making references to Hong Kong films, how would we know?
Well, I looked some of it up, and they are, and I've never heard of any of them. But
well, instead, we'll just fly and kick over to the plot.
Acha!
Oh, boy.
Yeah, go ahead.
This isn't the worst one we've done.
Focus your ki and let's go.
I never understood. Is it ki or chi?
It's chi in Chinese. It's ki, and I think in India.
Ah, okay. There are some bad men in the town of somewhere China, but they're not as bad as the ones who've come to kick them out. That's the Axe Gang, and they're mean, mad mean. But even they won't bother with slums like Pigsty Alley. But two buffoons named Sing and Bone... will. They come wandering into this low-rent apartment complex, pretending to be part of the Axe Gang to try to rip off the locals for a bit of drink money. But the locals aren't all that impressed and basically kick their butts. Sing and Bone send for help, and some of the real Axe Gang come, and they too are thrashed. Seems that three of the renters here are actually kung fu masters in disguise. The landlady, who oversees all of this and is possibly the toughest thing on the block, doesn't thank them. Instead, she suggests they get lost. Meanwhile, Sing and Bone are back in the big city trying to lick their wounds and act tough. The Axe Gang picks them up and is preparing to kill them, but Sing manages to pick the lock on the chains holding him as axes fly towards him. Impressed, the gang dares him to release Bone the same way. He does. They tell Sing to go kill someone, and that will assure his entrance to the gang. So he and Bone go back to try and kill the landlady, and that goes horribly wrong. Yeah. They flee. During this, we find out that the landlady and her husband are also hidden kung fu masters, and they aren't having any of this gang nonsense. Sing and Bone flee again. This time, Sing can't figure out what to do, so sends Bone away. There's also a chance encounter with a young mute girl that he just happened to try and save from bullies when he was young. Sing, confused and ashamed, runs away. But the axes aren't done with Pigsty Alley. They hire assassins to go down and take care of the place. The assassins manage to kill the three kung fu masters as they're about to leave, but then have to face the fury of the landlady and landlord and find themselves fully trounced. The axes get Sing to break the most deadly killer in known time and space, the Beast, from jail, so he can take out these pesky annoyances. Will the Beast ruin the peace that landlady, landlord, and Sing have come to love? Is this movie equal parts Warner Brothers cartoon and Jackie Chan? Is there more to it than everyone kung fu fighting? Stay seated and find out.
The film. Very nice.
And yet doesn't still really touch the film.
Nope, left a lot out, but there's no way. It would be the whole show trying to describe the actual plot.
Yeah. My usual question, Max, did you see this even roughly? I'm sure you didn't see it in the theater, but did you see it roughly when it came out, or when did you see it?
Oh, here I actually get to brag.
Oh.
I saw it before it was released in wide release. I was a member of the Sunday Key Cinema Club, and they would show foreign and indie films before they went into wide release in this country.
Oh.
And this was one of the only comedies they ever showed.
Wait, was this the film club where it was always like kids dying in Eastern Europe?
Dead children. Yes, always.
Dead children aren't much fun. No,
it didn't start that way, but it ended up, it seemed every other movie was about children dying or having died or being about to, anyway, yeah. This one really stood out, and I remember the rest of the audience was like, they didn't like it, and I'm like, what is wrong with you people? I really enjoyed it when it came out.
You got to see it in a theater. Mm.
I did.
I did not.
Yep. Oh, okay.
I don't remember. It might have been you who told me about it. Man, where would I have been? Because it was 2004. It probably didn't get here till 2005. Yeah. It was on DVD. Somebody must have told me about it, or maybe you had a copy. I don't know. So, but I saw it back then. So, wow. Okay. Do you remember? You obviously liked it.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was great.
If for no other reason than it was never dying seen... children.
Yes. I was so happy.
Yeah. It's good.
It's like, I mean, there is a sequence where they're about to set a mother and child on fire.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh no. Oh no.
Not again.
Oh God. Not again. Not again.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. So
no children were set on fire in the making of this film.
Yeah, nobody was hurt. Well, no, I'm sure people were hurt.
Oh, yeah.
But I would like to make a proposal.
Okay.
Know...
This is so sudden. Yes.
But Max. Oh, Max. You are so, so very Max. I would like to propose that we do not try and mangle these poor people's names. After Stephen Chow, I would like to just refer to the actors by their characters' names, because I know I'm going to get it wrong, and I really just don't want to denigrate their names.
Yeah, I honestly don't know what would be more embarrassing for them, the hash we would make of their names or... Yeah, sorry, guys, you're great. We can't say your names.
It's not that we can't. I just don't think we're going to say it right, and I'd rather not insult them by saying them wrong. Stephen Chow. Nice. Okay, thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, let's start off with Stephen Chow. Stephen, what the hell kind of name is that? Yeah, Stephen Chow, he's the director, he's the writer, he's the producer. The star. Yep.
He's Ed Wooding this film. No.
He's doing what Ed Wood should have done.
No, he's not. He's not spreading the blame around.
That's true. And he wears no angora.
No. But he's fun. And
he is a lot of fun.
He knows, I'm not going to say whether I ended up still liking this film or not, but he knows how to direct and keep a film and keep it moving.
Yeah. The pacing is very good. And he is a lot of fun. Also, isn't one of those directors who just wants to make himself look good, because he is absolutely willing to look completely idiotic.
Yes, through most of the film. So Stephen Chow equals yes.
Yep.
Then the landlord, not a huge part, but he's part of a duo.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the greater part of the duo, but he is good he is funny and he is actionful.
The actual actor, sorry, Yuen, I think that's how you say it.
I thought we said we weren't going
is to do that. Is a martial arts master. And apparently, Stephen Chow said about him, the guy was so good he could mimic almost any style you showed him.
Wow.
Yeah, he is actually really impressive, as is the landlady, whose name I won't try.
So he can mimic Quisp and Quake style?
Yes, he can.
How about Kangaroo? Terrifying.
Well, you know, no one's been allowed to do that since 1978 and the unfortunate milk and sugar incident.
Never mind the pasta explosion. We know.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that was a dark time. But the landlady actually studied at the Peking Opera with Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung, and Yen Biao.
Oh, that explains a lot. Okay, I'm going there. The best character in this film is the landlady.
She is hilarious. She is a goddamn Warner Brothers cartoon.
Literally.
When she runs a couple of times, they're literally doing the Flintstones leap into the air, feet start moving, and then sound effect.
Pa-choo! Yeah, and we'll come back to that. But she is every inch of toughness. There is one scene, too, I love that it's very little scene, but she kisses her husband, and she has this permanently attached cigarette, and when she kisses him, it's still there. She doesn't take it out. It
still hangs out of her mouth. By the way, she is, or was, kind of a Bond girl.
Really?
I didn't know this until I looked it up. Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, no.
When they're fighting in this martial arts school little schoolgirls save James Bond.
Really?
She's one of them.
Oh, she's one of the daughters. Oh, no, the nieces.
Yep.
Oh, my nieces. God.
Yep.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Isn't that a great connection?
I wish
she'd
beaten
that.
Up Roger Moore. That would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been hilarious, too.
Is the center? I mean, she's not the central character.
Yeah, she's the heart. She's the heart of it.
She is the spotlight. As soon as she shows up, everything is just. She's hilarious. I loved her.
Yeah.
The next character is Crocodile Gang Boss. He's there in the beginning of the film. He goes away.
Yeah.
He's fine. Yeah.
Fine.
Donut, who is probably the least of the three, and I only say that because his character is fairly.
Yeah.
It's either him or Cooley. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they don't really have a lot of personality.
No, Taylor, the gay one. Oh, my God.
He is funny as hell.
Yeah. But yeah, the three masters are good, and you can tell that they know what they're doing. And some of them, especially Taylor, who's not listed here for some reason. Oh, yeah, he is way further down. He is the biggest transformative because he is a big swish. He is a huge swish. And when he's not fighting, he is like, oh, no, don't touch me. And like, oh, and he's holding his hands up and stuff.
Yep.
And then he smacks the counter and all these iron rings go on his forearms and he's incredible. And you can tell it's not like, oh, we got like a stuntman in here to take his place. It's like, no, it's him.
No, all three of those guys they were originally retired, but they're martial arts stars.
Yeah.
They were in a ton of movies.
Yeah. We then have the actor playing Brother Sum, who is awesome because he's both stylish and although he doesn't really do any martial arts himself, he tells other people to do it. But he's got
But he dances a lot.
He has the Riz.
He has the Riz and he can dress. I gotta say, the Axe Gang. Yeah. Are so well dressed. Yeah. They're all in matching black suits, black ties. Apart from the fact they all look like they should be walking out of a Mormon temple, they look good.
Well, they have top hats too.
They do. Yeah.
So very.
I don't know why only some of them though. I'm betting that's a rank thing.
Well, they seem to only have them to take them off because they're not really wearing them. They're just sort of carrying them.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Yeah.
But yeah. Then we have Bone, whose character name I did not know until after doing the research for this, because I don't think it's ever said.
No. Do they ever say Singh's name?
Not to my knowledge.
No, I don't think they do.
Yeah. And he's the supposed big tough of the two, and it's obvious that he has no toughness in him at all. He's supposed to be the one that, if you don't do what I say, he's going to beat you up. Look at his big axe tattoo. Which looks suspiciously glued on.
Or possibly Sharpie.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, no, he's, hello, I'm comic relief fat guy.
Yeah, and he's fine. He's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Then we have the Beast.
Oh, boy.
I love the Beast because you look at him and it's like, this old guy, you're worried about him? And same thing, when he lets loose. So the deal is, he was put in jail, and the only reason he's in jail is because he can't find anybody worth fighting. And when they...
Yeah, he stays there because he's bored.
Yeah.
It's like, why would I bother?
And so the Axe Gang gets him out to try and take care of the landlady and the landlord because everyone else has failed. And they're like, hey, how much do you want for doing this? He's like, hey, if they're actually worth fighting, I'll do it for free because I'm only in here because I feel like it. And
he has this incredible sense of menace about him. He really is. Because they start him off as like, oh, he looks like this harmless kind of scuzzy old guy.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like, okay, you get the idea that he is terrifying. And this guy, you know, I can't say his real name, except his name was Bruce Leung. He used the American Bruce.
Oh.
And it's that Bruce Leung. Oh. Yes, he was a
probably
huge martial artist and a huge fight choreographer. He, in fact, did some of the most memorable sequences in both Enter the Dragon and, of course, Black Belt Jones.
Oh, dear.
Yep.
I mean, it's no Velvet Smooth. She's smooth as velvet.
Yep.
It said so on the box.
He is awesome. He is very cool.
Yeah, then there's a lot of miscellaneous. We have the two harpists
bunch of other guys.
Who are really more for looks than they are. They're not really characters,
they're mostly for style.
But they're cool. Yeah. They're very cool. We have Fong, who I think is the...
She's the mute girl.
She was fine. She has a small part. And then
she doesn't do much.
Yeah. There's actually a character named Inspector Chan, whom I had to wonder if he had a clan.
And was he, in fact, amazing?
I don't know, but my first note of the whole thing was, Inspector Chan, really? They're going to go with that character name? Mm-hmm. Does he, in fact, have a clan? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. One of my notes is, first notes is, in the police station, on the wall, it says, there's apparently, crime busters.
Yeah.
That's what the cops call themselves. Sure. Okay, sure. And
they're real good at it. So,
oh, yeah.
The acting is very broad. Let's put it. It mm-hmm. is a comedy. It is a kung fu mm-hmm. comedy. And the acting is very slapstick. Broad.
Yep.
But it comes through fine. Like everybody, especially the landlady. I love her. When this film starts, though, the next note I have was, it's the old west of the east.
Yes, yeah.
That's kind of what it is.
Yep. When they're in Pigsty Alley, I have, the Chinese version of Lower Filthington.
Or East Stabbington, don't forget.
East Stabbington, yep.
Yeah. So we start off, and there's some violence in the beginning. One of the crocodile gangs is running away and gets his leg cut off with a flying axe.
With a surprising lack of blood.
Not only that, but when he thuds, it's like, you can tell that there's really a leg there. I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the violence is very cartoonish in this. There's a lot of it, but most of it is, there's a lot of, well, I got better, except when people die.
Which, there's some dramatic moments. Happen. Yeah, and it's characters that we like. We don't know anything about them, but we like them.
Yeah.
So, one of the questions I wanted to bring up is, and this relates to our poll question, does the mix of comedy and violence work?
Yeah, I think it really does. It's like slapstick taken to the extreme. A lot of the violence is very Warner Brothers. I keep expecting somebody to be hit with an anvil.
And when Max says Warner Brothers, he doesn't mean, it's, you know, the action is greater than usual and even worse wire foo. No, he literally means I hate bringing this movie up. If you ever saw a movie called The Villain, which stars, of all people, Kirk Douglas and Arnold Schwarzenegger. They literally try to do a Western comedy doing all of the old sight gags from Warner Brothers cartoons, and it does not
paint it on tunnel mouth.
Does not work.
Yeah, and that's what's happening here. I mean, the physical impossibilities, the running at ridiculous speeds where their feet really aren't touching the ground. There's a sequence where the landlady slams into a sign, and she's flattened against it like a cartoon.
Well, and he stamps on people's feet later on in the film, and they all go totally flat, like not just you broke my toe. It's like literally a steamroller rolled over them, and there's other uses of CG in here, but the comedy and violence thing, I think one of the reasons it works is because of the films that came before it. Now, I think if I remember correctly, you were also in on this back in the 80s. Somehow we got hold or were able to get hold of a lot of Hong Kong action films, and we started watching a lot of Jackie Chan or other films.
And Jet Li, the old ones.
Yeah, or even things that weren't comedies or just action films, but things like Chinese Ghost Story, the original ones, stuff like that. And we found them fascinating and fun and interesting, and in a lot of cases unbelievable, except for Jackie Chan, because Jackie Chan basically would say at the end of his films, no, there weren't any wires, I actually did that, here's me getting injured while doing this thing.
Oh, poor Jackie. The man who broke Evel Knievel's record for the most bones broken in a single human body ever. And please don't anybody try to beat that record.
Well, and films that he did like Police Story and Project A and Armor City of Hunter. God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Drunken Master were his earlier ones.
In a lot of ways, I think this movie is both a parody and a tribute to those movies. Because it's that same kind of insane, over-the-top, but still you're going, oh, ouch, every so often.
I was saying it was a parody, and it's taking this to another level, right? Because, yes, he didn't do wire foo, Jackie Chan didn't, but there are thousands of kung fu action films that use wires all the time.
Yeah, what is it, wuxing, it's called?
I don't know. I don't even want to pretend to know, because, I don't want to insult the whole genre. Mm-hmm. But one time I had a box that was like literally 30 kung fu films. Here you go. Mm-hmm. And you knew watching these, this is just a drop in the bucket. There is so much more.
Yeah.
And some of them were a lot of fun because they do involve humorous stuff or humorous takes on Chinese culture. One of my favorite recurring ones is the idea that there are hopping zombies.
Ah, the hopping zombies. Yep.
And that's what they are. They are undead that get around by hopping. They literally can only hop.
Their arms stuck straight out in front of them. And they hop their way along.
And I don't get it.
Hopping down the zombie trail.
And there's one about vampires, and there's a baby vampire, and it's cute, and they want to keep it, and okay, sure. My favorite one, though, and I wish I could remember the name of this, we got this on something that was literally called Black Belt Theater. It was just random Hong Kong films. And it was this film about these mysterious deaths, and it was something about mantis-style kung fu. And we're watching this, and my partner at one point in the film said, I bet that she turns into a mantis and attacks people in the end of the film. And I was like, oh, come on. And he was right. She actually does. And the whole plot of the film is the fact that female mantises kill their mates after having sex. And that's what happens in this film. And we're just like, I don't believe I'm watching this. But it is hella fun in that it cost $5 to make this movie kind of way.
Yep.
So this didn't cost $5, but it's sort of like the logical progression of those films, Jackie Chan, and now Stephen Chow.
In a lot of ways, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things I really like is it's not just the physical comedy that's funny. A lot of the dialogue is funny, and that's very hard to translate.
Yeah.
And just little moments where Singh really wants to be a badass. All his life he's been beaten up and he's realized the good guys don't get anything. The Axe Gang actually say, we're the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, there's no pretending here. And I just like the moment where going, Bones, he's an ice cream vendor, go by. And they're like, I want to be a bad guy. Ooh, ice cream.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that undercut that pretty solidly.
I love the fact that the beast is being held in the atypical pathology center.
And for some reason, when they show up at the place, they're playing the Armenian folk song, The Saber Dance.
Yeah.
Which is for, you know,
die,
what?
Why not?
The music in this is wild.
Yeah, well, and so is everything else.
All over the place. Some of the physical comedy, not just the punching and kicking. I don't know why, but there is a sequence where Bone and Singh are trying to throw knives at the landlady, and they all end up hitting Singh in the most ridiculous ways possible. And now, this is really disturbing because the knives are sticking out of him.
Yeah.
He's not bleeding, mind you, but they're sticking out of him. And it's hilarious.
Yeah, it really is.
At one point, it turns out there's just this random cage full of cobras lying around that they pick up and try to throw and they fall all over him.
Yeah. Well, the best part, too, is that there are two knives. He tries to throw two knives and they both end up in his shoulders. You have to see it to understand how. And then Bone's going to do it. And he literally pulls the knife back as if he's going to throw it. The knife blade gets stuck in Stephen Chow, and he throws what he thinks is the knife and hits the landlady, and she just goes, who threw a handle at me? Who's doing this? And then, of course, she sees Bone, and it's like, uh-oh. And that's when they take off. So, yeah, there's other lines, too. There's one point to explain their behavior. The line is, young people make mistakes. Because that does explain everything, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's also a scene, and I don't know that it's a tribute to this, but I couldn't help but think there's one point in the final battle where landlady, landlord, and beast are all tangled together, and all I could think of was, oh, no, a Siamese human knot.
Oh, God, from Batman. I noticed that. I don't know if it was, but
there is a connection because, of course, Bruce Lee played Kato, and he did co-starred in an episode of Batman as Kato.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And he had to pretend that Burt Ward was holding his own against him.
To be fair, Burt Ward did take lessons from Bruce Lee, some lessons. So they were friendly, but let's face it. No.
The actual, I mean, we talk about it as the comedy scene. The fight choreography in this is remarkable. Mm-hmm. And by the way, a lot of those techniques they talk about, Buddha's palm technique, that's real. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, not it as doesn't depicted. Knock over it doesn't knock over buildings yeah. or create huge palm prints in the ground, but it's a real technique, as is the octagon staff.
Yeah.
And even the way of the iron fist, which is not involves no scowing or anything.
Or Danny's.
Or Danny's, of Rand or otherwise.
Yeah.
I loved watching the landlord fight because he's using basically sleep foo.
Yeah.
His whole thing is falling asleep in the middle of the fight and, you know, being completely relaxed so none of the punches hurt him.
Yeah. Either that or he's rubbery. I can't even tell. Yeah. It's hard to tell. It's interesting because I want to say it was actually a couple of years before this that we got Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I think that was 2001.
It was a little before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing mm-hmm. about Crouching Tiger that interested me was that was pretty much, as far as I remember, the first really, really, really widely distributed Hong Kong film. And
yeah, it was the largest scale, I think.
And there's a lot of scenes in there where it's like, okay, the wire foo is strong in this one. Like, there's times where they're, like, leaping in the air and then landing on a flying sword blade and then leaping off. And it wasn't meant to be taken literally, right? It was meant to be fantasy. It was meant to be legendary.
And yeah, it's magic, basically.
And the American audiences, for the most part, went with it, which surprised me. Because, in general, our stunts are more realistic, even though the results of them are, shall we say, not. And it was nice because I had seen a bunch of Hong Kong films and that didn't bother me. That's part of the whole deal. But this basically said, yeah, wires, whatever. You can't see them, but you not only do you know they're there, but there probably are no points where they're not attached.
About the realism of the stunts and such, it was funny, the time when I saw it with the film club, we had a discussion afterwards, and one of the big complaints was, oh, the martial arts were so unrealistic. You know, all the stuff they could do. I couldn't help myself. I'm like, really? You say our stunts are more realistic? No, they're not. They just work in a different direction. We have no trouble with the idea that Rambo can fire an M60 machine gun with one hand. This is a weapon that takes two people or a Jeep. We have no problem that James Bond can somehow have a laser that can melt steel in his wristwatch. Without, a nuclear reactor hauled along next to it. We have no problem that people drive these cars from one building to another, through the air, through the windows. The transaxle doesn't break, and they're just fine afterwards. We have our, accepted suspension of disbelief because we're used to it. Why not a cowboy can shoot, the wings off a fly at 100 feet while blind drunk? Yeah, we accept that. Hong Kong audiences accepted this sort of thing because the idea is martial arts at a certain level in the, I don't know what you want to call it, the philosophy or the mythology, whatever, becomes a kind of magic. The ability to focus the chi, the spiritual energy, lets you do things supposedly that are miraculous. So it's really just a question. It's very culturally centered. It's much less absurd to them.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And the thing is if you can get over that, which honestly isn't that big a deal, these movies are a lot of fun and there's lots of them. So
yeah, and some of them are astonishing. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. A lot of them are terrible.
Yes. And a lot of them, it's like,
that just happens.
Oh, sure. We've seen a number of them that are actually boring. And the fight scenes are like, okay. It's just, we've said this many, many times on the show. Even if the story itself is either nothing new or not very good, if you tell it well, if you make it entertaining, we don't care. The story in this, it's about one rival gang shows up, kills another rival gang, and then they get their feelings hurt by these people that affront them at this apartment complex, and they eventually get their asses handed to them. It's not very deep. It's not very interesting itself, but the way it's told can make all the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing in the story is original.
No.
I mean, talking about tributes, what do they call Singh at the end when it turns out he's a natural kung fu genius? He's the one.
Yeah, well,
he's friggin' Neo.
There's some heavy Matrix influences here. But there's The Untouchables shows up twice, and it's like, why that movie of all things? But and that's kind of interesting because we don't know which of our films make what kind of impact over there. They see a lot of our junk because we send it to them, but which ones actually do they find interesting or enjoy, and for what reasons? We don't know. But when we see them show up in films like this, suddenly we get an idea. And apparently The Untouchables was a favorite. Okay.
Why not?
So here's a question.
Yeah.
What did you think of the CG use in this movie? Oh, did you notice it at all?
Yeah. Did I notice? Gee, no. I thought they were. I thought the Beast was actually inflating the front of his neck.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to break it to you.
I mean, I guess they could have done that with latex or some such, no. But it wouldn't have looked as good. No. I think the CG blended very well. I don't think it was overused. Obviously, when they're doing the cartoon running.
Right.
But I think it worked, and I think it did just add to the over-the-top nature of it, and they weren't even pretending they weren't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
When he's soaring into the air, and he bounces off the back of a bird...
I love that.
To stabilize. It's so great.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, you're not even pretending.
Well, and there's even one point where this car, this old-style car, comes skidding into view and hits something, and it's like, that's not a real car. It's not actually there.
No.
I actually want to say that the CG itself is not that well done, but that actually adds to its working with the film. If it had been more realistic, I don't think it would have worked as well. So
I think you're right.
It stands out like a sore thumb, but it's okay, which is weird, but it's true. It's like, don't fix this. Don't like come back to the movie and make the CG all perfect. No, don't do that.
And just some of the, there's some levels of complete absurdism in it. At the end, in the big final fight, capital F,
yeah.
When Singh alone is fighting the entire Axe Gang and the Beast, and he's knocking them around literally through the air, you're getting pinball machine noises as they hit things, and it's hilarious.
I hate to say this, but that actually also might be a Matrix tribute, because, although, the second Matrix movie haven't come out yet.
2004?
I don't think so, because remember...
I thought it was 2002.
Maybe you're right, I don't remember, but we were in our show, you made note of the fact that during the big... hurly-burly fight with Neo and all the Agent Smiths, they actually use bowling pin sounds.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I like the three masters. The three masters that are hiding are almost so over the top, almost more caricature than character. And I actually kind of wish, in a way, that Stephen Chow had maybe taken things a little further. I would love it if everybody in the building was a hiding kung fu master and nobody knew it, because they're all like, we just want a nice, quiet, normal life.
That's right. It's one of the, I don't know if you'd call it a theme, but at one point they say being ordinary is a blessing.
Yeah. Could you make head or tail out of, I don't know what else to call him, Bum Boy?
No. The barber? I have no idea.
He's this
guy just walking around with his pants hanging down. I mean, in America, if you'd made him a plumber, we would have got it.
But it's not just a crack. It's like literally all of one cheek.
Yeah.
And there's
most of his butt is hanging out, I guess. I don't know. It's funny!
Well, in one scene, there's a
close-up. Maybe it's a trope we don't know about.
And it looks like he's wearing lipstick. So I was wondering if they were trying to imply that he was also gay. Because they keep calling,
I have no idea.
They keep calling the Taylor Fairy, and he's like, and I mean,
but they never say anything to Bum Boy.
No, and they don't say anything mean about Fairy. Just landlady says, once a fairy, always a fairy. That's it. And
yeah,
there is one point where his clothing gets wet, and you can see that his underwear is red, and they're making fun of his red underwear. And he's like, "What's wrong with red underwear? Oh, I'm so upset!" And he goes wandering off. Yeah, I couldn't figure out that character either. It was the only one that I couldn't quite figure out. I wasn't sure what they were implying with him, if anything.
All I can figure is he must be, that type of character must be either a trope or an exaggeration of a trope.
Yeah. All I know is that he was not at all impressed by Singh and said so. And
yeah.
Although, doesn't Singh end up in a... Somebody ends up in a barrel. Was it him or was it just...
The landlady, I think, is the one who knocks... No, not the landlady.
No, because she hides under the bed, which I didn't understand. Yeah. When the Axe Gang first shows up, she hides.
Yeah, so does the landlord. They're acting all frightened. But, of course, they've sworn never to fight because their son died in a fight.
Well... Did he? Because it's awfully implied that it's Singh.
Yeah, he could be him.
Could be.
And again, I do like the fact, because it's such a throwaway. It's not like it's a central theme. No. It's just like, he could be our son. And that's the last we hear of
him. Yeah, he's about the right age. And look, he knows, he has the Hong Kong Book of Kung Fu.
Kung Fu, yep.
Just like Penry, the mild-mannered janitor. Yeah. Hey, everything either comes back to Hong Kong Fooey, Gilligan's Island, or Robot Monster. Sometimes all three.
This is we have demonstrated this many, many times.
It is the central thesis of our show.
Yep. What do you think of the ending?
I think there's actually some nice symbology there. I actually liked it. Basically, what happens is we find out that we see a flashback scene where Sing, as a child, is duped into buying the Hong Kong Book of Kung Fu for $10 from this strange hermit character. And he's going to go and be a good guy. And the first time he sees badness, these kids beating up or harassing this poor mute girl, he goes to try and save them and finds out that the Hong Kong Book of Kung Fu is, shall we say, flawed.
Yeah, if you look at the first page, I think it says it's the 2-cent Kung Fu manual. Yeah.
And they meet up later in life, and she's like, I remember you, and he freaks out and wanders off. But then at the end, when he has purified himself and the paths of his chi energy have been opened by fighting with the beast, he sees her again, and they turn into little kids and go running into Bone's candy store. I think it's actually really nice, and I'm guessing it's meant to be sort of a symbol of purity and starting over again and stuff.
Yeah, I think it's the idea that who they were has connected. He does the whole thing. All I could think of was like Harry and the Hendersons or...
I'm sorry, what?
Trumpy in the Todd People or Space Bob, whatever that mystery was. Because there's a point where Sing wants Bone to leave him alone.
Right.
Either because he thinks he's holding him back or he's afraid that Bone's going to get killed.
Yeah. Which is...
And he does the whole, no, go away. I don't want to hang out with you. I hate you. I hate you, Trumpy. Go away.
Gods, Trumpy-dumpy.
Trumpy-dumpy. And we don't see their reconciliation, but next thing you know, they've got a candy store together, and it just works. You just go, of course they do.
Well, I don't think he's in the candy store with Bone. I think Bone has done that on his own.
No, they're both wearing the uniform. They're both wearing the aprons and the striped shirts.
Okay, maybe. But I think Bone started it, and I think Sing showed up and is
we
like,
don't know.
Just like the landlady and the landlord were trying to fit in with a normal life. I think that's what his choice was. But then, to be fair, the actual ending is that weird moss-covered hermit guy shows up and is trying to sell the book to another kid who unfortunately has a runny nose, which is really, really gross.
It really is.
And he's trying to sell the $10 book of Kung Fu, and the kid's not having it. He's like, oh, did I mention there's a series of six? And the kid's like, oh. Suggesting that there might at some point be a, Kung Fu Hustle 2, but there isn't. So
I know, not yet.
Yeah. I did do a little quick look at Stephen Chow, just so people know. He eventually stops being an actor. He actually decided to focus on being a director. His name is technically Stephen Chow Sing Chi. His films include From Beijing with Love, Forbidden City Cop, God of Cookery, which is also worth looking up, King of Comedy, which I haven't seen, Shaolin Soccer, also good, CJ7, nothing about it.
It's kind of an E.T. version.
Is it? Okay. Journey to the West, Conquering the Demons, The Mermaid, and his last film that I've seen is from 2019 called The New King of Comedy, which is a remake of The King of Comedy.
Ah.
He wrote, directed, and produced almost all of those films.
Mm.
He only produced, the first few he didn't produce, but after that he did. So he's made a lot of money, made a lot of films. Apparently not the greatest guy in a relationship.
Oh, dear.
So I'm looking at pretty much the end of my notes, Max. What about you?
Just one other little, kung fu nerd thing. The Beast is clearly master of the toad style.
Yes.
Toads are a big deal. They are one of the 5 venomous creatures in Chinese folklore. Snake, scorpion, centipede, spider, and toad.
Oh, that explains that movie. That's Something versus the
five, deadly venoms. Venoms. Yep. Yep, that again just it emphasizes how evil he is because he has studied this poisonous evil technique.
Toad.
And because he puffs his throat out like a toad.
Yeah.
Because that's essential. Yep. And if you fight him, he gives you warts.
Yeah, there are toads that if you lick, it gives you something else.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, I'm glad he didn't try to get... I'm glad he didn't try to get the guy to lick him. So.
Yeah.
Yep, I also do like Bones' line, his last line in the story, you two, put your pants on.
Yeah.
He's yelling at the kids.
Which, thankfully, nice we don't touch. See, and I'm like, what?
Thank goodness. Yeah, yeah.
But I think we've come to the point of this show where we, too, should put our pants on and get to the point whether we like this film or not.
The finish.
So, Max, where are your pants?
Yo. Never mind. I am freed of the tyranny of pants.
That's not all that's freed. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, you can't say pants in a podcast.
Unless you're talking about your Johnson. But you saw this in the theater, which was not an easy thing to do. It was a blessed relief from Kindertoten Filma that you used to have to watch.
Yep.
So that was a long time ago. Have you seen it since?
It was. I did. I saw it on video, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe, a while back.
Now, let's be fair. This is a very silly film. It's unendingly silly.
Yes, quite agree. Very silly.
So what do you think now?
I friggin' love this movie. I love this movie so much. I think it's hilarious. It moves along beautifully. I know I'm missing a lot of the jokes, because apparently there's a lot of cultural references in this movie that just go right over my head. A lot of the actors in it, apparently a Chinese audience, a Hong Kong audience specifically, would recognize. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I just think it's so much fun. I think the characters are great. The landlady is a goddess. She should have her own movie series.
Yeah.
She is awesome. I think Stephen Chow's really funny. I really like this. This is a solid one for me. What about you? You saw it on video. Had you only seen it the once?
Yeah. I haven't seen it probably since 2005. Wow. It may have been 20 years since I've seen this film. I remember it. And I've seen like clips, you know, every once in a while. My partner really likes the fight scenes in this, so he'll bring up the landlady once in a while for people who don't know who she is. So I haven't actually sat and watched it for 20 years.
So how does it hold up? What do you think?
It's great. If you have never sat and watched a Hong Kong action film, that you could think of many, many worse films to start with than this.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of... The only thing I might say is you might want to start with this because it takes things to the extreme. You might want to start a little lower. And I can't believe I'm saying this. You might want to tone down it a bit with maybe a Jackie Chan or a Sammo Hung.
No, I think that's reasonable.
Because
they are silly also. They aren't as, you know, this one goes to 11.
Yeah, and the Jackie Chan stunts and the fighting are quote-unquote real. Yes, it's choreographed, but he's actually moving that fast, and he's doing things like this one fight scene, I don't remember, I think it's a police story, where he is fighting with a step ladder because he's kind of tangled up in it, and he has to move the ladder and punch through it and around it and hit people with it and fold it up and swing it around. And you're like, how did he do that? And then, of course, in the outtakes at the end of the film, you find out, well, he didn't do it right every time.
Yep.
But here it's like, yeah, they didn't do it. It was wires and it was CG and whatever. And nobody cares because you can tell they are still skilled.
This would still be fun by itself, but I think you're right. I think seeing that, or even going and watching Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon,
one of
the so-called good ones, or the classic Jet Li ones.
Or heck, if you had not seen one of the major Bruce Lee films, the plots in those are ancillary.
Yes. If you want to see, if you wish to pay tribute to the late Chuck Norris, you can check out Return of the Dragon, where Bruce Lee beats him in the warm-up sequence.
Is that the one that also has John Saxon in it? Because John Saxon's in one of Bruce Lee's.
No, that's
film.
Enter the Dragon. Enter the Dragon. That's Enter the Dragon.
And never mind, I know it's not worth watching otherwise, but Game of Death has Bruce Lee fighting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which is
just visually amazing.
Because
you know, Kareem is 9 feet tall and... Bruce Lee is a foot and a half tall.
Yeah. So the rest of the film is terrible because it's not even Bruce Lee. It's literally an actor wearing ski goggles, so you won't notice.
You can't tell.
or that amazing scene where he's looking at himself in a reflection in the mirror, and they have literally taped a photo of Bruce Lee's face onto the mirror.
Yep, but he's holding his body, so it's supposed to look like his, and it fools no one.
No. So this was a kick. I got to go back and watch Shaolin Soccer again, and I can't remember if I've seen God of Cookery. I think it's just been told to me to watch that too, but those three films got over here to some extent, and they're worth looking up, and it's a lot of fun. If you've not seen them, you might think the violence is a bit much. There's not really that much blood in it, though, and sometimes there's none.
Yeah, like where there should be.
Yeah, there should be lots and lots, and there just isn't. But it's a hoot. It's a lot of fun. Everybody's a lot of fun. And you know what else is fun? Our poll question.
Yes, indeed.
And we would love it if you would answer a poll question. And this week, the poll question of the poll question du jour is, what is the best cinematic mix of violence and comedy, or should they mix it all? Let us know, and how can you do that? Why? You can email us directly, like Franz Josef Haubwitz at us at maxmikemovies.com. You could go to our website like Vince does, answer our poll question, give us suggestions for series or movies should be in series or whatever you'd like. Give us some feedback. We like that. That is, of course, www.maxmikemovies.com. We are on every podcast app known to man, even ones that aren't known to man. There we are, Max Mike Movies. You can call our hotline, and Max went dateless this week. I'm sure his little heart is sad and broken.
No.
You can call us at 617-398-7266. That number again is 617-398-7266.
I don't even care. What?
If you like social media, don't forget Facebook and Blueski, because we're still there. That's where most of the answer to the poll question anyway. But we are done with this series.
Done. Finished. Yes.
Which was because I wanna and you're gonna like it. So Max, we have another series coming up. What is that series called, and what is the first film in that series going to be?
This series is going to be called This Looks Like a Good Place for a Stick Up, and it's gonna be heist movies. Ooh, caper movies
that steal your
crime
heart.
Films. That's yes. Your and of course the real loot is the friends you make along the way.
Yeah, sure.
We're going to start with an old one.
Ooh.
An old one starring Sir Alec Guinness.
Alec Guinness never stole anything.
Yeah. Except our hearts. Yes, he did in The Lavender Hill Mob.
Oh, when's that from?
Yes. That is an old black and white one. Oh. I believe it's English. I've seen it once 100 years ago. I don't know if it's going to hold up. We're going to find out. But we're in this to the end.
Well,
and we're going to
we're in this to the beginning because it's the first movie of the series, Max.
Well, you've ruined my entire outro, so I quit. I'm done.
Next week on Mike Movies, it'll be the Lavender Hill Mob, and maybe Max.
That's right,
and maybe Menudo.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.
Buttonizing. I am buttonizing my deep, sonorous voice. Today, the sexy overtones of...
Sexy.
Just say sexy, sexy. The entire episode's going to be sexy.
An hour of sexy.
Remember, they can't see us.
Probably be our highest rated show ever.
Sexy.